You'll somehow make it work.
That's right.
Designer.
Designers.
Oh, God.
Andre.
Where's Andre?
What happened to Andre?
What happened to Andre? Yes. That's what it was. That's
Angela. What happened to Andre?
God, that was literally like a lifetime ago.
I know, it truly was.
I don't know anything. Obviously, like, that was just one of the big FOMO things with you guys where I was just never into it. But the one clip that I always makes me laugh so much that the prize, I think, Shamir, I don't know who I got it from, was that like guy, like the Asian guy who like wrote a piano song about like something that he was doing his dress design for.
What?
This guy wrote. There was like some like sort of Asian twink designer.
Okay.
And he was like in the final running, and it was that bit where they sort of go home and work on their own.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, I wrote a song about something, and he just plays this piano. But he's like, that's beautiful. Like, what's the song about? And he's like, I found a dead cat on the road, and this is the song about how that made me feel or something. And it just cuts to Tim Gunn with this like blank face going like, wonderful. It's like.
And
that's
well,
put the clip for you guys to enjoy later.
I'm looking at it now.
Oh my God, yeah.
All right, wonderful.
All right, now I have to watch it.
It's weirder. It's even weirder of a story the way he describes it too.
Yes, put his ear up.
Oh. Put his ear to the ground.
Kentaro, I remember him.
And Tim also looks like he has a band-aid or something on his forehead too, which just lends to like the surreal weirdness of what's happening here.
All right, wonderful.
All right, wonderful.
The quiet panic on his face.
Just like the nodding, just like the sort of thinking of what to say, like how to wrap up this conversation.
There's wonderful. Like so much math. I just watched it. There's so much math being done behind the eyes.
No, I know.
Like, what the fuck do I say?
Yeah, it's like Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind. And welcome to Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three chums watch a bad or bizarre or perhaps something that should not have been made movie and talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it, all while enjoying a themed cocktail. I am your host for this mini episode where we'll get into some of that later, Brendan Drischler.
I'm Lee Delahanty.
And I'm Chris Ravel.
Now we're all here and we've all figured this out. And going off of what I just commented on earlier, of course, we'll be going into the movie that we will be watching 2 weeks from now and the drink that we will be drinking to accompany that movie 2 weeks from now. To start off with, we will be watching 2009's The Box, directed by Richard Kelly, based on the short story Button Button by Richard Matheson.
And I also want to point out the script was also written by Richard Kelly.
Yes, I think he usually does his own.
Yes.
I have a spontaneous question off that.
Ask it.
Yeah, go for it.
Is the title of the story Button Button based off of this phrase, Button Button, who's got the button?
I assume so, yes.
Where the fuck does that originate from?
You know, it must be a game or something. I feel like it's one of those games where everyone, like, there's one button and everyone holds their hands closed, you know?
Like a closed button.
Yeah, like a close button.
Yeah.
And you have to like tap the hand that you think it's in or some shit like that. I bet that's what it is. That would be my guess.
I've heard that. It's a book?
By the way, yes, that's absolutely correct. It is a children's game where players take turns guessing who has hidden a button.
Great. So glad we have Nintendo Switch now.
It sounds very British, is all
it does. I know. I agree with you. I'm sure this feels 100% like a British child's game.
Yeah. Oh, shall we play Button Button? Who's got the button?
Button Button. Oi, Governor, have you got the button?
That's what you have to say. You have to say, oi, Gov,
TV. Oi, Gov, who's got the button then?
So, this is another Richard Kelly movie. As some of you might know, we did Southland Tales way, 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 way many years ago, way early on, like our fourth or fifth episode, I want to say. So this will be the second Richard Kelly movie that we have done.
Okay, I just want to point out, second he's directed, but third that he's written, because I believe he also wrote
Domino. Yes, Domino, he has a writing credit for Domino. So we will have covered three of his four credits, I guess, by the time this is done. Donnie Darko being the lone exception.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if that would make for a great pod movie.
No, it wouldn't.
Though.
So I wouldn't suggest it. I think Donnie Darko has... We'll get into this later. But yes, The Box, 2009, starring Cameron Diaz, James Marsden, Frank Langella. A movie that I watched this morning, and it makes Southland Tales look positively hinged in comparison. So I'm really looking forward to getting into what the hell all of this means. So I think we'll have a good time in 2 weeks.
Wait, can I just be clear? You're saying it makes Southland Tales look even more unhinged?
No, I'm saying this movie is so unhinged, Southland Tales looks hinged.
Oh, I see. Yes. Wow. Yeah, that's some big praise.
It truly is. I think this movie is more insane than Southland Tales is, which we'll obviously, like I said, get into in 2 weeks. And the drink that we will be making to accompany this movie is called Button Button. It is 2.5 ounces of bourbon, 1/2 ounce of honey syrup, blueberries, blackberries, bitters. What kind of bitters did we decide upon? I forget. We had said either rhubarb or what?
Or cardamom.
Cardamom. Let's do cardamom. That sounds fun. Cardamom bitters, Luxardo cherries, and sparkling water. Now, we're going for an aesthetic thing here. It's a little more complicated than some of the ones we've done lately. So what we're going to start with, we're going to make box-themed ice cubes. And you're going to make those ice cubes by mixing water with a splash of Luxardo cherry syrup for color. Add a Luxardo cherry to each cube and then freeze it. I have some large ice cube trays that we're going to use for this. So for our version, the ice cube will effectively kind of, you know, be the size of the glass. So it will just be one large ice cube. Then what you're going to do is place one box ice cube in an old fashioned glass. In a shaker, combine bourbon, honey syrup, bitters, and a few of both kinds of berries. Muddle the ingredients, add some ice, shake it until it's chilled, and strain the drink into the glass. Then you just add some sparkling water to fill up the rest of it and give it a gentle stir. And that will be what we drink while we try and watch and make sense of the box.
I'm excited. I suggested this movie because I find it to be kind of wonderfully unhinged. And there's like an abundance of things that, like, maybe you're not interested in thing A, yeah, but there's like things
There's B 38 for Z other things
that you can go and like fix maybe if you're interested in that.
Yes, I had truly forgotten how much is going on in this movie.
It is maybe the most like scattershot conspiracy thriller I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it feels like every Richard Kelly movie, starting with Donnie Darko, has just been adding more and more stuff. And this is the if Southland Tales is a double stuff Oreo, this is the mega stuff Oreo.
yes, very much.
All right. So as I said, 2 weeks from now, we will be going into that. For this mini episode, though, we're sort of doing a gentle quasi follow up to the TV themed discussion that we did 4 weeks ago. It'll be 4 weeks ago by this point. Whereas at that time we were talking about what was it exactly we were talking about TV related? It was about like romances, right? Or relationships.
Like couple pairings.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. So we were sort of kicking around other ideas of TV related topics to talk about because we don't really do TV all that often. And one of the things that was suggested was the concept of our favorite TV side characters. Now, I know, Lee, you had sort of a quasi-specific idea of what you considered to be a side character in this context. Do you want to say like what you interpreted that as?
Sure, but I don't have any examples. But when you pressed me for it, I'm going to go with my most recent one, which is basically anyone who isn't like main, anyone who never gets like an episode centered on them.
Right.
Like in the New Girl realm, it wouldn't be like any of the main characters. Like it wouldn't be Coach, it wouldn't be Winston, it wouldn't be Nick, Schmidt, Jesse.
Right, but it could be like Jess's friends, like the psychologist friend.
Yeah, it could be the guy. Yeah, it could be Jordan Raphael.
Yes.
My queen.
Yes. So, yeah, right. Effectively,
that,
it's a
that
character.
Homeless guy that's like outside their apartment who I forget which comedian plays him. But yeah, like characters like that.
Right. Someone who is not in every episode, but then periodically will show up like for a little bit in an episode or, you know, maybe for a little bit more in one episode. And it's just sort of like, oh, it's fun that this person is showing up here. It's fun that we get to bounce off this character. They're enjoyable. And, you know, too much of them would probably be a bad thing, but it's nice that we get to have some focus on them for a little bit here.
I think that's a really good thing to kind of include there as part of the definition is, I mean, and I feel like we've discussed this before through the lens of like, when sequels are like, oh, you loved this side character? Well, now the movie's about them. And it really makes you realize, like, wow, this was not created to be focused on. This was a spice, not the protein, you know?
Right. I mean, it's not an example that lines up with this, really, and it's a movie one. But the idea of after three Pirates of the Caribbean movies, when it was sort of like, what if Jack Sparrow was the focus point of Pirates of the Caribbean 4 and 5? And it quickly became evident that, no, that doesn't work. He works better as, you know, a supporting character in the story who still has a lot to do, but he cannot be the focal point of the story. It just makes him so much less interesting. And so this is, you know, ones that did not make that mistake, ones that sort of had a better sense of how much to tip their hand in including these characters.
I
don't know about everyone else's numbers, but I have three that I thought of.
Yeah, I have like four or five, technically, depending on how much I feel like going into it.
And who knows? I mean, the last time we did this, you and I not only had one in common, right, but we had like identical reasons for choosing them.
Yeah. So maybe we'll have the same list actually this time.
Yeah.
I could start since I'm hosting this, I can kind of just start
throwing
some of these out. So there's one. I guess I have like two show examples in particular that I think are probably skewing a little more toward beyond what we had kind of kicked around as an idea. And the two shows, one of which I thought of two characters are, one for Penny Dreadful, the character of Ferdinand Lyle, the Egyptologist, who shows up sporadically in the first two seasons and then starts to show up considerably more as the show goes on. But just a fun character who I feel like the show knows that they can't include him too much as a focal point. He can't be around too much, or he gets a little stale, shall we say. But someone who I enjoy seeing to pop up with a little bon mot periodically, someone who gets to, you know, join in on the action at the end of the season, but then sort of goes off to do their own thing. It's not like he's moving into the house with them or anything like that.
I have no memory. I'm looking at pictures of him. I'm like, what the fuck is he doing?
He's the gay character.
It's been a minute for me and Penny Dreadful, so I just forget him.
Yeah, he was.
I remember like the look of him, but yeah.
Yeah.
What a fun show. I miss that show.
I do too. He was one of the first ones that came to mind for me, frankly. And the other one that I think is kind of pushing it a little bit is on Frasier, which has two characters who I think kind of fall under this description. And the two characters are Bebe and Lilith. And it's sort of a stretch because whenever they do show up maybe once a season, and whenever they do show up, the episode tends to focus around them in some meaningful way, where it's like, oh, Frasier has to renegotiate his contract, so Bebe is showing up, or, you know, Lilith shows up in Seattle for a visit and Freddie is with her or something like that, you know. So it's not so much just that this is a character who shows up for, you know, one scene in the coffee shop, makes a couple of jokes, and then is like, and I'm off out of the storyline, see you later. So it is, I think, kind of pushing the concept of that a little bit more, but they are nonetheless characters who, you know, as I said, only kind of show up once per season. So they're not someone you're getting a whole lot of in the show. And every time they do show up, I always enjoy having them around. I'm blanking on the woman who plays Bebe.
That would be Harriet Sampson Harris.
Harriet Sampson Harris. Yes, thank you. I was completely blanking on her name. Yes. Who is just a lot of fun in the show. I admire her sort of over-the-topness when it comes to the role. She does a lot of sort of kind of like hammy theatricality. Mm-hmm. Anytime she has to sort of, you know, say any kind of dialogue at all. I can't remember like what it was where she says something, where Frasier mentioned something along the lines of, I don't even remember, but she says like, the word is candy to me or something like that. And it's just like such like a fun way to throw in a character who is even more over the top and absurd than Frasier and not have it tip the scales of how ridiculous the show will sometimes get. And the other two I had that were kind of a little more mild in how often they show up because they generally don't get a whole focus point are Dr. Spichemin from 30 Rock and on Futurama, both the robot devil and hedonism bot, who I feel like that's probably one of those things where I have not really seen like the Hulu Futurama episode. So it's like, I feel like there's a 50-50 chance we've had a hedonism bot episode at this point. You know, it's just one of those things where like, if you're on a long running show, at a certain point, they start to be like, have we done an episode about this guy yet? And so then we spend, you know, 20 some minutes poking into their lives and helping them out or whatever, what have you. But those are kind of, I think, more in line perhaps with what you were describing initially, Lee, characters who kind of just show up to quip periodically. You maybe get one or two scenes per episode, and then you just sort of disappear into the ether. So that's what I had from my list here.
I also just wanted to say that Harriet Simpson Harris also just like appears in like random art films these days.
She's
kind of amazing.
Like, yeah, no, I think she is predominantly a theater actor, I believe. So she does a lot of, you know, stage work. She also shows up in Addams Family Values, which I'm sure people have probably seen. So she is just sort of, a fun persona to sort of throw into your movie or TV show or what have you.
You'll also be happy to hear, and I've not been watching because it was pretty bad in the first season, but she apparently appears in the second season
of the
Frasier reboot.
Yeah. New Frasier, yeah. I have not seen any of New Frasier, to be honest, and I really don't know if I ever will at this point, especially because now it's like quasi-canceled. It's it's kind of done, but I think they're still trying to shop it to other networks. But it's really just kind of like, Kelsey, just let it die.
Just let it die, Kels.
Like, you couldn't bring back the magic with only, you know, a few of the characters. So, like, just stop trying. So I would probably seek out her episodes, I think. I would probably seek out any episode of New Frasier that has a character from old Frasier in it.
What's the take on this one now?
Right. I know Roz shows up a few times. What were you going to say, Lee?
I've seen an episode of New Frasier with Lilith in it.
How was it?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't been forever since I've seen Frasier. It was... it's like about Freddy's birthday or something. Okay. And it's like, there's a scene where, like, they're Lilith and Frasier are like talking about how like he doesn't really know what Freddy wants because he wasn't around as much, and it's Frasier's like, well, it's not really my fault, blah blah blah. Like, I would have been, you know, it was kind of, that was like an interesting scene. Like, I remember, like, well, that's kind of a good scene where they kind of talk about like Frasier has this idea of like what Freddy wants to do, mm-hmm. because or what do you think Freddy wants, and Lilith is like, you don't know that, like, right. But I know more context than you. And it's like the lesson that Frasier has to learn is like understanding who his son is now, not like mm-hmm. his idea of what his son was from like mm-hmm. the weekends or whatever that he used to get him.
Right.
It's not bad. It has like that guy that's like Niles's son or something.
Yeah, I do. I have not, again, I have not seen the show, but I have seen clips of like the kid who plays Niles' son, and he does seem to be well cast.
It is,
yeah,
Niles's it is like just Niles 2.0. Like, right, it is right. Just that's, like, yes. Niles colon the next generation.
Yes, that's kind of the gist that I've got. So, you know, like, well done casting, well done to this kid.
Yeah.
You are effectively just playing Niles, but, you know,
yeah,
good job.
I would, if I would watch for anything else, I'd probably be watching for that character because I'm fascinated mm-hmm. by the decision to be like, because like Freddy was on the show, right? But it's like, right. We don't really know. I'm kind of want to understand more how they, the extrapolation of Niles and Daphne's son, and how he seems to have inherited nothing from Daphne.
Yeah, that was kind of the impression I got. I was kind of wondering how they would do that whenever they were announcing the reboot show. Like, will it be like, oh, like he's sort of half and half, yeah, or he's more Daphne? It's like, no, he's just baby Niles.
It's like, it's Treasure Planet, and they have a daughter who's right. Just like Daphne.
Right, yeah, yeah. I'm sure, yeah. Right, right. They have a daughter who like sort of with a very
sort of
British
Daffy
accent.
Daffy British lady.
Right, who claims to be psychic.
Yeah.
It's they both separately asexually reproduced clones of themselves.
Yes.
But they now raise as their own children.
Right. Yeah.
All right, I can go next if we're
go.
Ready.
Go for it. Go.
This is the first one I thought of when the whole idea of side characters was pitched. I know Parks and Rec was mentioned as one that has a like quite a large amount of them because, you know, like they establish Pawnee, and while they use Pawnee as a way to like sneak in cameos that don't recur, they also have a pretty hefty number of recurring characters that are very memorable. So I chose my favorite out of the recurrings, and that would be Joan Calamezzo.
I was honestly debating about that for a while.
The local news monster. I am obsessed with her whenever she comes by. I think if it was a main character, the joke would wear very thin very quickly because Joan is just like a lot very constantly. So I think in the fact that she's maybe in like every odd episode, is like a really, really good deployment of her. She's just this crazy, ridiculously vapid and self-centered local celebrity who has not even, you couldn't even say that she's necessarily even the local news. She's like local.
It's like a morning show. Yeah, like a local, like, yeah.
And, you know, she has this like book show or this book club that sort of Oprah style makes or breaks any writers in the area. One of my favorite things ever was she had a thing where she would try to gotcha people on her show. And then she had the, what was it? The
gotcha dancers.
The gotcha dancers. That's what it was. Yeah. And there's also just this like incredible episode where like two of the main characters are kind of forced to entertain and or take her out to lunch. And she just gets like monstrously hammered and comes onto them both. It's so good.
And they go back to her house was the thing that I remember. They take her back there and she has like nude paintings of herself.
Yes. She has this like giant nude portrait of herself painted. It's magical. She's super hilarious. I always look forward to her showing up. Very memorable. Staying within sitcom space, because when I was thinking about it, I realized sitcoms really are an easy place to put in an effective side character, right? Because already if it's a sitcom, there's not as much of an expectation for you to do deep characterization. So it does give you more space, I think, to kind of do these like goofier yet thinner characters. I'm a big Abbott Elementary viewer and fan. Do either of you watch, by the way?
No. I've always heard good things about it, but I've just never gotten to it.
It's good. It's very funny.
I believe it. It's just for whatever reason, it's never come up.
The thing that blows my mind is it's like as if it's just like a consistently good show. I feel like a lot of times sitcoms are very hit or miss for me. Mm. But anyway, the main character, Janine, played by Quinta Brunson, starts off the show with this sort of like no good deadbeat-ish boyfriend named Tariq. And he's the side character I'm choosing just because they clearly really like the actor, Zach Fox, who plays him. And he's basically this just like cartoonishly about, incredibly ignorant about the world. He thinks the PTA, for example, is the Parent Tariq Alliance. He's just like this monster, but they've like find these like creative ways to believably keep him in the world without feeling like it's a stretch. Mm-hmm. And every time he shows up, it's just enough of this like total almost like there's a himbo quality to him, but he's very energetic. His jokes are really funny. He's like dating a student's parent and he thinks that makes the child Tariq Jr. It's great. He's really wonderful in the role. They find excuses for him to do music because I believe Zach Fox is also a rapper. But yeah, it's like, he's super, super funny. I think if the character were to be overused, I would feel differently, but he's not. He's used like as a perfect punctuation. And he tends to turn a lot of the other characters who are even more goofy into more like almost higher status or like straight men characters, just because he is always the dumbest person in the scene. Far dumber than the children, especially. And then my third one, and we're taking a swing because I was trying to challenge myself. I'm like, there has to be a side character you like in a non-comedy. Yes, this is a drama.
Or a dramedy.
But it definitely has elements of dark comedy at
or
times.
Or a traumedy. People get injured, but it's funny.
Oh, I thought it was going to be, you mean a comedy about trauma?
Yes, it's about trauma.
No, but this trauma. But this is, this is Severance is where I'm going now. I think it has a reputation for being very serious, and it is for the most part, but it is also quite funny sometimes. And my favorite side character probably right now is, there's this like mad scientist who's involved in stuff. I don't want to like spoil too much in case people haven't like watched or aren't aware of it, but there's a mad scientist whose reputation is quite wild. They like pioneered this crazy process. They're very mysterious and kind of intense.
Well, and you like it, when they it, like, yeah, she worked on
Her name is Rigabi.
Yeah, like she worked on Severance. Like Severance, she created the procedure that is to sever yourself.
And she wasn't as much of a character in the first season. She's become much more of one in the second. But even in the first season, there was this like mystique, this reputation. And, you know, what you know about her leads you to believe she's going to be this like, she's a serious person. She might be a little nuts, but she knows what she's doing. And the second season has been about showing you she maybe has a 70% idea of what's going on and whether or not what she's doing is actually going to work or is helpful. There are so many scenes. So, and there's just a point where she's just like living in the main character's basement. And it is just hilarious. They just play her, the actor plays her so, so well. There's like a thing where she has to do this like really intense procedure. And you'd think like, oh, they must have done this 100 times before. And she's like, oh, I have it a little more figured out than the last time I did it, which was like the first time.
She, the line she says that always cracks me up is, don't worry, I'm better at it now.
Yes!
Like, imagine if a surgeon said that to you before doing surgery. Don't worry, I'm better at it now.
It's so good. And that's like in between her like badgering the main character about like, where do I put my recycling? Like it's great.
There are other like little details. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm pretty sure when like at one point the main character like sort of ambushes her with a conversation. It literally, by the way, is that meme. They do that meme where like there's somebody doing like this, like overbearingly talking to someone intensely. And then it cuts to like somebody like eating something like ice cream out of a tin going like, you know that meme?
She's just like eating yogurt, and
I don't think it's
like,
yogurt. I think it's cake frosting, Chris.
Oh my god, even more bleak. I love it. He's like, you need to do this procedure to me now, and she just goes with her like spoon of frosting. It's so good. I also just wanted to point out there was like there's like a scene where she's like doing this procedure, and they're like, wait, so do you know for certain this is going to do it? She's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And then she just looks like fucking terrified as she's doing it. It's just, I just love this choice to make this character so much wilder and more chaotic than the idea of like, yeah, they're like a surgeon and a scientist and they like figured out this crazy thing. I love the instinct to make that character comedy. And I think she adds this like perfect amount of levity.
If I could add to this, Chris, because I really like Rigabi as well.
Please do.
I would say that like it is funny, like it's like it is funny, but I also think that the actor walks this really good line of like this is somebody who ostensibly is saying they're going to help, but like it also comes across as like so sketchy, like everything that she chooses to say is like very deliberately phrased, and it's like, what is her goal? Like, she's definitely like she's constantly pushing for like, no, you should do this now. We should do this. And
like she leaves this feeling of something being veiled or kept back or something ulterior.
Yeah, there's like something. Yeah, and maybe that's just her being intense, or maybe she has like mega ulterior motives. And maybe they're like aligned with Marx in some way, but maybe there's a point where they're going to diverge. It's unclear. But I think the actor walks a very good line with that character of just like playing it. Legitimately maybe concerned, but also like not necessarily like, you're not sure, is she concerned for Mark as a person or because she needs Mark for something else down the line.
I also just wanted to give from the same show an honorable mention to the main character, Mark's brother-in-law, Rick and Hale.
Rick and Hales, yeah.
Who is a pop philosopher who just writes these like pablum filled books. And he's just like a goofy character from Mars. And he also has like a little like handful of friends that are just as like out to lunch as he is. And whenever they show up, it's a delightful like few moments of clowning that you get on this otherwise pretty twisty serious show.
My favorite is the one bit. He has that one friend who like when the baby goes missing briefly. No, I'm talking about Rebecca. I'm talking about the one where the baby goes missing and like the Mark's in the room with the baby, but then the guy comes in and is there's the baby. I found the baby. And
I saved her.
Like, it's me. I'm the one who found her. He like says it.
So good.
Like takes it out of Mark's hands.
It's so good.
But yeah, then Rebecca later on is like, don't blame the baby for ruining this event. it's only a child or something, like refers to it as an it, and like and even Rickon later on is like, god damn, Rebecca.
Yeah, it's true, which I love that as a detail. I'm like, oh, Rebecca's even too weird for him.
Yeah,
because he seems to surround himself with just like vapid kind of like high on their own intellectual supply weirdos.
They're also in the first, like in one of the very first scenes of the show, like having a conversation with Mark, who's a professor of history formerly, and they're like, isn't it weird that they didn't call World War One the First World War until later? And they're all like as if it's some great mystery. And eventually Mark has to be like, well, it's because they didn't know World War Two was going to happen. Like, you idiots. Like,
and that was at the dinner party without food, because what they're eating, Brendan, is ideas.
Yeah, this is okay. My anecdote on Severance that I'm going to say on the podcast, since I've said it to Chris already, is that okay, like this is one of the first episodes. It's literally the first episode of Severance. Mm-hmm. The first thing that you see is this dinner party with no food. They're just eating water, and they talk about like, I can't even think the last time I had a food-based event or something. That's a line someone says in the first scene. And this is my first time meeting the outside world of Severance, a show that I am told is a weird sci-fi situation where people break their personalities up to go to work or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I'm instantly like, what happened to food in this world? Where's food? Is something weird going on with food? Are we not eat anymore?
Well, and it's also because like there's been at least two other scenes where people are in places where you would expect food to be, but food is not there.
And then so... like later on in like episode two, I think Mark goes to a diner and he has this like, he's on the phone with somebody and somebody sits down and he's like, you have to like hang up now. I need to talk to you. And he just says like the craziest line that no one's ever said in the history of mankind, where he's like, sorry, I have to go. The food, they've cooked the food and the food is now here. And I have to go. They've cooked the food and now it's here. Which is like, wait a minute. It's like he doesn't know how to describe the process of a food being served. And that was like not the innie Mark, that's outie Mark doing that. And so I was like, what the fuck is going on? And it really took me like three or four episodes before I realized, okay, the show is just fucking weird, but there is actually food. People do eat normally. There isn't some food crisis. They haven't replaced food with pills or Huel or Soylent or whatever.
Or Soylent, right?
Like, I was so convinced that there was like some sci-fi situation where they would just stop eating regular food for some reason. Mm-hmm. But no, it's just the first people you meet happen to be the insane weirdos that Rickon hangs around with, who have dinnerless, foodless dinner parties. And then everyone else is just fucking bizarre. And that show is just full of like unhinged dialogue and insane line readings where you're like, what? Yeah. Like pretty much everything Milchick says is just like,
oh my god, it's
not
amazing.
A thing a person says.
That actor has to commit to some of the strangest line readings. He does a very good job, to be very clear, but
yeah,
they give him some of the weirdest things to say, and he just really fucking commits. Anyway, I am very glad with the digression it went on, because I love talking about Rickon and his dumb friends so much. They're some of my favorite people.
The one that always makes me laugh is in the middle of industry, there is lonely dust or something.
Yes.
That's a good one.
In the middle of it, yeah. He has like, that's like one of the lines in his like stupid book. Anyway, Lee, we now come to you. Who are you?
Yeah. Well, good. I'm padding it out because I didn't have any of my own really. Not entirely a lie, but I had a hard time, even though it was my own idea of like thinking of examples that sort of fit the description. But I have a couple that I can kind of talk about that probably are not, I don't think any of them are, except for one, are gonna be anything that you guys have heard of, and that's fine. But the first one, I'll start with the one that you will know, I think counts, is I want to talk about Jack and Hagar from Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
Never had an episode centered on him. No, wasn't every episode. I think he counts under this definition.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones was like one of those big ensemble TV shows where you would just like, you'd kind of not know what you were going to get because there were so many characters and places. You're like, where am I going to get to go this episode?
Right.
And I was always happy to be taken back to the prisoner cart or the city or the faceless temple or whatever the fuck Jack and Hagar was hanging out at. I loved the weird way he talked. I loved his whole deal. I loved his like weird, interesting relationship with Arya, where it was this sort of like mentorship at like it turned into one, but at the beginning it was sort of this grudging alliance, because she kind of knew some shit about him that no one else knew. And I think like he owed her, like he has some sort of weird code where he was like I owe you stuff, and she kept turning in these favors, and they'd be like really stupid, ridiculous favors, and he'd be like, I don't want to do that, and she'd be like, if you don't, like I'm gonna do something, and he's like, all right. But he was a great character. Love me like a weird, mysterious, you know, more than meets the eye guy, and then he turns out to be a cool assassin, even better. There'd be like a lot of Game of Thrones bits where you'd have to like, it's like, oh, we got to go back to like King's Landing or some bullshit. It's like, oh, but whenever you get back to the characters you like, you're like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, right.
Now it's time for these two idiots, like Bronn, all the Bronn scenes.
Yes.
To watch. We've just watched these really heavy dialogue play out. Now it's time for these two idiots fucking around in Essos.
Yeah, right.
Like Tyrion and what's his nuts when they had to just like tool around for a while.
Right, just like bumming around.
just bumming around. Those were good times. I miss those times. And the Lord of the Rings show kind of gives me that. The what the fuck is that show called?
They like copyright extension.
The copyright extension of the Rings.
Oh, Rings of Power.
Rings of Power. Yes, Scott.
I don't even watch.
Boy,
the
like
show.
I know, I just completely blanked. Like I've watched the show, and I still fucking.
But the thing is,
because
they do like a fun title drop thing where they do like. It's more like Celebrimbor literally does say like, I guess you really are the Lord of the Rings. He says it. I don't know if you ever watched that far.
I don't remember if I did.
He fucking says it. It's so funny.
I guess these really are some Rings of Power.
Celebrimbor is like, spoilers for Rings of Power, a show that really is just like the wackiest Lord of the Rings fan fiction. Yep. If you're not gonna get like needlessly upset by something that doesn't ruin the source material, watch it, it's stupid and fun. Like he's like dying with like a spear, like speared to the wall, like tortured up by what's his nuts, Sauron, and literally his dying words are like something, you are the Lord of the Rings. And he dies. And it's one of the best things that's happened in television, I think, the year that show came out. Just the gall to do that is so good.
Yeah, seriously.
So good.
Yeah. But it's a similar experience where you watch it and like you have to go through like, oh, the sad elf is back.
Right. I was gonna say it's a lot of like it's a lot of vegetables where it's like you have to like, okay, now you have to deal with this because it's important for plot, and you have to deal with this character, even though they're mopey and you don't care.
But I don't want any more shoe leather.
No, more shoe leather.
Yeah. And then you go, oh, finally, yay, we're back at this one. We're back at the super hot Numenorean guy. That one dude. I don't know his name. He's really hot.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I know what you mean.
But yeah, it's good. Those are good shows. You know, I guess it's good. It's like even though I've just talked about how half of them I get bored with, it's nice to have those moments. You know.
Yes,
it's
it is.
It's like a microcosm of life.
It's the character itself isn't necessarily a representation of the whole show, right? I mean, you're just zeroing in on that one character and their effect.
Yeah. Yes, and yeah, exactly. I had another character I was thinking of from an anime that I'd watched, and I think it kind of exemplifies the type of side character that I like, both in anime, which is it's quite common, and a bit in other shows. I think it's common, and also like in sort of period pieces or like fantasy in general. There's this anime called, this is one of those anime titles, so just settle in. It's called the, hold on, I have to look it up, I'm going to say it wrong, because I already looked it up earlier. I think it's called the Saint's Magic Power is Omnipotent. It is, in a nutshell, about like a 22-year-old from our world who is summoned to this fantasy realm by a magic spell that is supposed to like attract like a sort of like holy saint that's supposed to like purify the land of this miasma that is currently suffering it. It's supposed to bring someone that's like supposed to bring a woman, two women end up there. Her and like a 16-year-old girl also end up there. And they're like, well, this is weird. There's two of them. And they one of the, there's some prince or whatever arrogantly is like, it must be this hot 16-year-old, and just like grabs her and is like, she's the saint. And then they just kind of like leave the 22-year-old to be like told like, yeah, sorry, we can't send you back. So you live here now. and it's like sort of quickly played out over the anime that she is in fact the real saint. She's told she really has nowhere to go. She was just like an office worker back where she was, but she likes gardening. So she finds this garden that's part of the local, the royal like apothecary or like herbalism place. So she becomes an herbalist at this place and is, they make potions there, and she becomes, her potions end up being so good. They're always way better, the potions that she makes, than all the other potions. And spoilers, it's because she's the saint. And eventually it gets found out, and she has this like guard that kind of goes around with her. And it's very much like a, who's that? What's that movie with the three where the boys are nice?
Oh, Home Again.
Yes. It's a lot of anime like of this ilk are like that. They're like a, what's the director's family name that?
The Myers.
It's very Myers-esque. Like, boys aren't, what if boys were nice?
What if boys were good?
The woman are like the lead characters, and they usually have some sort of expertise or ability that makes them vitally important to the plot, and they resolve problems through their skills, and they're surrounded by 1 to 4 hot guys who are just nice in various ways. Mm-hmm. So she primarily has this like knight that's supposed to escort her to all of these places that she has to like purify and shit. But there's like a bunch of other people, and then once it's found out that she's the saint, it's kind of important, like, you know, she starts to get more attention from like other people and notably guys. But she gets the interest of like the Mage Academy because what she does is also a kind of magic. So she gets a little training by them. And she eventually meets this character who's like he's sort of the default head mage because he's the best, but he's also like young because he's more of a prodigy. He's the one that summoned them, but his spell like was so insane that he like went into a coma for a few days after he cast it. So like he would have been able to tell everyone like, yeah, that's not the saint. It's this 22-year-old. She's the saint. But he was like asleep. So she meets him, and his name's Yuri. And he is this character that you see in a lot of anime and also in a lot of other I would say fantasy or period piece stuff where like, he comes from like a well-off family. He has an older brother that is way more responsible, which means that he's just like an absolute space case, ADHD king. doesn't care about anything except his thing, which in this case is magic. So he's like a little like, it gets to the point where like, you know, he's like, he'd be the kind of person that's like, we should have sex and make a child so that it would make a really good kid. They'd be so magical. I don't care about you. I just think we should do it. Like that kind of a character. And he would be the type of person that like would say that. Like he's like very like, I don't know if you'd call that like autism coded, but he really doesn't care about like appearances or whatever. But he is just kind of this character that's there to like be silly and wacky, very smart and capable, but like also not someone you really like, someone that basically needs like somebody running around after them to like be their sort of keeper, because if they don't, then he does in fact have like another mage at the place who's like the responsible one, who isn't the one in charge but does most of the actual legwork. Apothecary Diaries has his character as well, but he's like a lead character, so it doesn't really count. But of that ilk, like somebody who's like really quite capable but is also quite like immature or impulsive or like wishy-washy in a way that like I actually need somebody else to do my adulting for me. Mm-hmm. So these type of characters are characters that I like. When they're side characters, they're much more allowed to be more unhinged. So yeah, I like that kind of character.
Very they're colorful. Just
like, so yeah, very colorful, very, very big, like again, kind of mad science-y, but in this case, he's a mad mage. But ultimately on the side of good, just, you know, just fucking insane, basically. Just
unhinged.
Yes.
Without borders.
Without hinge.
Yeah. And very silly, like very outwardly silly. So yeah, that's two examples. And then I had one from Green Wing, which is a British sort of sitcom. It is a wacky, absurd show. And I think I might have shared clips of this show a couple times because Michelle Gomez, it said Green Wing is set at a hospital. So it's about like the doctors and the whatever staff that work at this hospital. It was like a mixture of writing and improvised. I think a lot of improvisation went into the final product. It was very absurd. And it was very like sketch, like almost where like there would be kind of a plot that'd just be like scenes that would kind of play out almost like little mini sketches though. And there was a character who showed up a lot, but like was never an emotional focus. Like whenever the show did try to do plot, it would not involve this character played by Michelle Gomez called Sue White, who was the head of HR at the hospital.
I love Michelle Gomez.
Have you seen any clips from Sue White, Chris? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
You showed me quite a few.
They're all very good.
And if you also remember in the tiny, tiny bit of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina that you and I watched together, Michelle Gomez was a high point.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. She's on Doctor Who. She's great in that. She's amazing.
She just has like this like crazy chaotic energy that is just like,
yeah, that she
so
brings
fun
to everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, as Sue White, she is like, she's 100% in a show that is very ridiculous. She is the most unhinged character on the show. Like she is on a show full of like weird people. She is the fucking weirdest character. One of my favorite scenes with her is, there's like different dynamics she has to different people. And there's this one doctor that everyone universally hates. It's played by Mark, what's his nuts? I forget his last name. Character's main cast. Mark Heap. I always want to say Strong, but that's a very different Mark.
That's a different Mark.
Played by Mark Heap, who does this amazing sort of Poindextery, disgusting voice that he puts on called Alan for Alan Statham, the character, where he's like, yes, but actually, when it's like really like ratty and like just a horrible, horrible man kind of a character. And he's got some sort of petty complaint or whatever. And there's just this scene with them is like her. She's always got some weird thing going on. In this case, she has these like arm extenders that make her look like Slender Man. And she's like, the scene just starts with her talking about like, see, I always thought that God was just some huge creature with many arms, and just starts like waving her gigantic arms around and starts talking about what she thinks God is. And it's like not a wholly ridiculous kind of like sentiment about God just being like a being that takes you to somewhere where you feel like you're with people that you love or whatever, scoops you back and takes you with you, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of this, you know, kind of generally insane but well-meaning statement, he's just like, yes, well, actually, if you'd read the Bible, you'd find that it's not that at all. And maybe because she says like, well, I found it very comforting when my mother died. And he's like, well, perhaps if you know the truth, you would have felt even better. And there's this pause that he's like, and then perhaps your mother wouldn't have died. Which is not a good line. And then it just ends with her like reaching over to shake his hand with the big arm. And it's like, thank you very much for coming in, Dr. Statham. Then he leaves and she just does this like creepy dance with her fucking long arms. That's just one scene. And they don't, there's no context for why she has the arms. There's another scene where a doctor that she has like a love hate. It's really a hate thing, but they kind of have this like insult each other back and forth, and it's very sexually flavored a lot of the time. And Stephen Mangan plays this doctor. He comes in and he's not even looking at her because he's like, right, I just need to just sign this form. And it's very atypical because usually they're yelling at each other or saying sexual jokes. But he's just tired and not looking at her. And she's dressed in a squirrel outfit. She has like a suit on, but a squirrel head, like a mascot squirrel head and a squirrel tail. And are in normal hands, and he's not looking at her or acknowledging it. And they just have a very normal scene where she's like signing this paper. And at one point he's like, it's very hot today, isn't it? He's like, yeah, it's muggy or whatever. And then this whole normal scene plays out. And then right at the end, he like takes the paper and leaves, and she looks up and she's like, you know, you're so wanker. It's like this cursory, like they have to do one insult. It's very good. All of her scenes are really good. There's one where she just runs into the cafeteria in sort of jogging gear, calls everyone fat, and then like kicks a plate of sausages off someone's plate and leaves. It's insane.
It's a fun show. What you've shown of me has been really entertaining.
But yeah, those are my three examples.
No overlap this time.
Well reasoned.
No, not really. I mean,
really between us.
I did have a lot to say about Rigabi, but I didn't pick anyone from Severance because I was like, even somebody who
off on a technicality.
Yeah, I was like, even somebody who like isn't having something centered on them right now. I'm like, I don't know where this fucking show. I have no idea what's happening on the show. So maybe they're gonna be important. I don't know.
Well, I think we should probably wrap it up at this point then. Probably gone on for enough. So we will, of course, be back in 2 weeks with our episode on The Box. And we will find out what the deal is with that box. The box. And what's in the box? Spoiler alert, nothing.
Nothing.
So as always, you can go to our website, draftpack.com, to find our past episodes that don't show up in the feed. And you can find us on all the regular podcast apps that you probably already have on your phone. You can subscribe, you can rate, you can follow, you can do whatever it is that you want there. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our box discussion. Till then, bye.
Bye.